WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. As more South African variants of the coronavirus are found in Virginia, experts say all the vaccines are effective against them. Virginia Republicans are still wrestling with how to select their nominees for statewide offices this year, and time is running out to make a decision. And we talk with journalist Connor Town O'Neill about his research into Confederate monuments. He's our next Books and Brews guest. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, March 9th. The first case of the South African variant of the coronavirus was identified in central Virginia on Monday. According to the Virginia Department of Health, it was found in an adult who had no recent travel history. While this mutation is more contagious, experts say there's no evidence it's more severe. This is the 11th case of the South African variant found in Virginia. VDH says 31 cases have also been reported of a mutation originally identified in the UK. As of now, experts say the vaccines are effective at protecting against both of these variants. More families in Virginia are delaying sending a child to kindergarten for 1 year, and as you might guess, that's in large part due to the pandemic, according to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Research at the University of Virginia found that statewide kindergarten enrollment is down 13%. The study also finds that teachers could face larger gaps in the skills of young learners this fall. The families most likely to delay kindergarten enrollment are white, affluent families with sons. Virginia Republicans still don't know how they'll select their nominees for statewide office this year. Party leaders want to have a convention rather than a primary, but now they're back to the drawing board. Virginia Public Radio's Jad Khalil reports.
Republicans haven't won a statewide race in Virginia in over a decade. So when it comes to how they nominate, Alex Kina thinks it's mostly about electability.
It's less to do with whether they end up picking a conservative or a more centrist candidate, and it's more about what the party thinks is a winnable candidate, a candidate who can actually win.
Kina is an assistant professor of political science at Virginia Commonwealth University. He also says when you hold a primary, more people are involved. When you hold a convention, you only get the party elites and the most engaged party members.
That in turn affects who they're likely to choose.
A nominee that's more similar to former President Trump could be concerning to those focused on electability.
Trump has never won an election in Virginia, and none of his surrogates have won a statewide election in Virginia.
Friday, the party will hold a virtual meeting to develop a new plan. I'm Jad Khalil.
The House of Representatives will consider a major piece of union legislation this week. The bill was introduced by a senior member of the Virginia delegation. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
As chairman of the House Education and Labor Committee, Congressman Bobby Scott has spent years trying to update labor laws for the modern economy. This week, the House will vote on a bill he introduced called the Protecting the Right to Work Act. Doris Krause-Mays at the Virginia AFL-CIO says this bill takes labor laws that were created in the age of manufacturing and updates them for the era of Uber.
The current rules under the National Labor Relations Act, they're outdated. And we just need to have a more level playing field for workers that they have the right to organize and have a voice without any fear of intimidation.
Chris Ronlick at the Thomas Jefferson Institute says Congressman Scott's bill is heavy-handed and unnecessary.
It makes an increasing number of people who are independent contractors who want to be independent contractors, forced employees, and come under union agreements.
Senator Tim Kaine has signed on as a co-sponsor, but Senator Mark Warner is one of a handful of Senate Democrats who have not signed on to support the bill. Michael Pope.
Finally today, in his new book, journalist Connor Town O'Neill takes a deep dive into American history. In particular, he exposes the still raging battles over monuments dedicated to one of the most notorious Confederate generals, Nathan Bedford Forrest. O'Neill is WMRA's featured speaker for tomorrow's virtual Books and Brews. Our own Chris Boros spoke with him about his first exposure to a Confederate monument after he moved to Alabama.
So really, it wasn't until 2015 when I had this eye-opening encounter with a Confederate monument, which is what became the inciting incident for this book. So I was in Selma for the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, the attack by Alabama police officers on nonviolent civil rights demonstrators. And 50 years later, in March of 2015, it was what they call in Selma the Jubilee, this sort of symbolic march over the bridge. So I was in Selma, I was doing some reporting on that day. And as you can imagine, Selma's a small city, and so 40,000 people are suddenly there. Parking becomes a nightmare. So I think, oh, I know, there's this big old cemetery near downtown. I'll stash my car over there. As soon as I pull into the cemetery, I start seeing these signs that say, Confederate Memorial Circle closed, no trespassing. I just kind of credulously walk over and say, what are you doing here? Are you standing guard? And come to learn that really this group, who call themselves the Friends of Forrest, had spent the better part of two decades fighting about this monument of Nathan Bedford Forrest that they had put up. Nathan Bedford Forrest, a Confederate general, also a slave trader before the war, first Grand Wizard after the war, incredibly controversial figure from the Civil War. So, you know, to put up a monument of him anywhere would be controversial. To do it in Selma, it was only more controversial. But the dissonance of meeting this group on this day, this civil rights anniversary, the juxtaposition of those two things sort of gave me whiplash, but raised all of these questions about what it meant to put up a monument of Nathan Bedford Forrest, what it meant to do it in the present day. So those are a lot of the questions that I'm grappling with in this book.
The people that you met, the Friends of Forrest, they were there protecting the monument, right?
The monument originally goes up in 2000. Mm. It's protested. It was originally placed on city property. It's moved out to the cemetery, but it's stolen then in 2012. That theft only kicks up more controversy, more protests, eventually a federal lawsuit. And so by the time that I met the Friends of Forrest in 2015, they were fresh off of victory in federal court. So they were out there that day to get ready to put up a replacement Forrest monument.
Has that monument been replaced since?
It has, yeah. So I met them in March of 2015. They rededicated the monument in May of 2015 over Memorial Day. And just 3 weeks later, Dylann Roof murders 9 parishioners of Mother Emanuel AME Church in South Carolina. And after Roof was arrested, images from his blog started to circulate online. And it became clear that in advance of going to the church, he had gone on this strange, unsettling kind of sightseeing tour around South Carolina, visiting cemeteries of enslaved people, plantations, Civil War sites, and battlefields, almost in a way to sort of steel himself for what he was about to do. And so in the aftermath of the Charleston 9 murders, Confederate symbols come in for this massive referendum. And then after that, people in cities across the South start to launch campaigns to try and remove Confederate flags, other Confederate symbols, and of course, Confederate monuments as well.
I was surprised to learn that original monument went up in 2000. I think a lot of people, when we think about Confederate monuments, we think, oh, these things were built and put up during the Civil War or right after the Civil War. You don't think that they'd be built in 2000. How many other Confederate monuments are current and new like this?
Yeah, it's a great question. You think, you know, they're sort of from the era that they're seeking to commemorate. In 2000, this monument in Selma goes up, and it, in its own context, is responding to the same sorts of tensions and issues that were present during the civil rights movement. So Confederate symbols are being kind of weaponized in that same way, but happening at different moments as well.
Was it hard for you at all to write this book and to kind of delve into the mind of someone like Forrest? Did you have a hard time with any of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of upsetting stuff. I had to spend a lot of time learning about the slave society of America. That's when it really became personal, that I started to see this research that I was doing start to creep into my own life. But by that same token, it was also incredibly enlightening and helped me understand how this country operates and in my place in a much deeper way than I had before I started working on this book.
Connor Towne O'Neill is the author of Down Along with That Devil's Bones. He's our speaker for tomorrow's virtual Books and Brews at 6 p.m. We have details at WMRA.org. Connor, thank you so much for your time today. Looking forward to Books and Brews tomorrow. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure. Can't wait.
WMRA's Books and Brews series is sponsored by Gaines Group Architects. The Gaines Group has offices in Charlottesville and Harrisonburg. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Tuesday.